The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, number 156, for June 17th, 2008. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm here with John Braun, and John, happy third anniversary.
Are you kidding me?
I kid you not. Yeah, it happened a couple of days ago. We don't have anything special planned, but, you know, that's how it goes.
No, well, my present's coming. So, welcome back. But it seems that, you know, when you came over here, you forged the path of death and destruction or massive flooding. What did you do?
What are you talking about? Oh, coming back from California, bringing the rains with me?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a little delayed there. But anyways, I don't know about last night. I mean, last night was kind of rough here. I mean, we had, storm drains doing what they shouldn't do, which is eject water on the road instead of suck it up. So I don't know about you, how you did last night.
It was stormy, but not terrible. I actually had to drive back from outside of Boston last night, and it was, you know, it was what it was. But
okay, and I'm just mentioning this because I know we had a caller a couple of shows ago in Cedar Rapids, which has, as we heard in the news, they're mostly underwater. So I hope both you and your Mac are dry.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we have a bunch of stuff to go through. I did want to, last week, John, I think I hit a personal record. I did three podcasts in less than 24 hours.
Ooh, you're a rock star.
Yeah, so I did. We did ours, right? Just before I did ours, I was on the Mitch Albom show, so that doesn't really count as a podcast. That was just a radio interview. Detroit Drive Time, I think. And then later that night, I was on the iPhone Alley podcast, which was awesome because it's actually one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. So I felt like a fanboy being on there. And we had a great discussion. And then the next day I was on the Mac Roundtable podcast with all those folks. So it was lots of fun. We'll put links in the show notes to the various sources, but lots of fun.
Outstanding. So what did you do for Father's Day? Anything special or?
Yeah, let's see. Well, Lisa's dad was actually here in New Hampshire, but all alone that day. So he came down and we hung out and went out for, actually, we had lobster for lunch and steak for dinner. It was, you know, pretty good day. So
okay. We did I had the family, including the new in-laws over and the grill is a standard part of it.
Absolutely.
It has to be on Father's Day. You must grill.
Something. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. All right. So we have all kind. It's a normal show here in so much as any of these shows can be normal. Starting off with some leopard tips or not just leopard tips about everything. Edwin, though, has a tip that is specific to Leopard and Time Machine. You know, John, we often complain about, you know, what is it that Time Machine's backing up? And while we still can't know, Edwin suggested excluding, if you are backing up your iTunes music library with Time Machine, exclude the podcast directory. This is all content that, for the most part, you could probably re-download, and it's constantly changing. So you probably don't need that stuff backed up, and it's not a bad thing to do. So I like that piece of advice and wanted to share it.
Okay, that ties in, I think, and actually, I think I mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again, is movies.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, it's either, like in my case, it's usually movie trailers that I just like to have, especially now with HD trailers. You don't want to back up all those.
Right.
You know, they tend to get kind of large. So movies I exclude and podcasts or the music folder. Well, maybe not the music folder.
I go.
Or pictures, especially if you're, and I guess you got to think about your strategy. Like, for example, pictures, if they're also stored offline on a service like .Mac or something like that, maybe you don't need. So then again, the pessimist in me says that you should back up as many times as possible. As
space
long as it doesn't
is cheap,
take up,
man. Yep.
Yeah, maybe bandwidth isn't, but you know, .Mac I think is a good one of the good solutions for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
To sync up your data.
Yep. Pilot Pete points out, as say that 10 times fast, that when you go in and exclude something from Time Machine, all the old backups of that data still exist. So what you do is you go into the Finder and you highlight the folder that you want and click on Time Machine. And then it'll go into that, you know, foofy, crazy interface that I still don't understand. And once you've got that folder highlighted, you go up to the top in the toolbar, go to the little widget menu, which is like the little gear.
Little gear, yeah. Yep. We talked about that once, I think. But yeah, it's good to bring up again.
And then choose delete all backups of this folder. And that way it'll go back through and wipe all that stuff out so you're not saving it ad infinitum. So an excellent piece of advice. All right. We talked about all different ways of sending large files from one person to another. And Dave has another piece of advice.
Hey, guys. My name is Dave. I'm listening to an older episode, episode number 138. So sorry that I'm behind. I'm just catching up on old things. One of the things you talked about is transferring large files, especially somebody had a comment about transferring between somebody on a Mac and Windows XP, different things. You mentioned the FTP and the .Mac and the usendit. I just wanted to give you guys a heads up on our new service, fairly new, that I use that is tremendous. It's called Get Dropbox. Actually, that's the website. The service is called Dropbox, but you go to www.getdropbox.com. Dropbox is far and large the best one that I've used in a long time. Cross-platform, it downloads a little client onto Mac or Windows, and it actually installed itself to give you a folder, a shortcut to those folders. Easy to find, but the nice feature on it, I believe it's still in beta, so it's free right now. I believe the new beta users are getting 5 gigabytes of storage, and the beautiful thing about it, you just drag whatever you want into your Dropbox, and it will seamlessly integrate with multiple computers. It was designed originally to be for a way to keep files synchronized between multiple computers for yourself, so your office computer, home computer, laptop, whatever. The nice thing is you put it in there, and it'll over the internet automatically update those files in every location. One of the other really nice things is, especially if you're doing a large file, an Excel spreadsheet, for instance, let's say, a large one, but let's say somehow you have a 100-megabyte spreadsheet. If you went in and changed just one cell, most file services, you would need to re-upload and resend that entire file. The way Dropbox works, it figures out the delta or the change in that file, and it only transmits that change. I guess it's a lot of technicalities behind the scenes that makes it work. I don't know how it does it, but if you actually look at your transmit rates and all that stuff, it will only transmit whatever you have changed, so that's a great time saver. Another nice thing they have a shared folder in there, so anything that you put within your shared folder, if you right-click on it, you can do copy public link, and you can email it similar to you would you send it or whatever. Email or IM somebody a link, and it will let them automatically download that. Another beautiful thing it lets you do is kind of a collaboration thing. It lets you create shared folders, so you could specify only these users are allowed to see this folder. So, for instance, the two of you could create a shared folder. Different usernames, different passwords, but anything that you guys drag into that folder, the other one would automatically get uploaded. You could both actually be in there and editing and changing at the same times, and it would automatically figure out who has the most recent version, and so on. Again, I know I'm rambling. They have a great demo video on there. Again, it's www.getdropbox.com. Check it out. I think you guys will love it.
But wait, there's less. Wow. There's a lot going on there. That actually sounds pretty cool. We gotta check that out. I'm really curious about his claim that it will transfer only the changes in one file. The only way I could see it doing that is if it's actually cloning on a block for block level, the virtual drive, if you will, if it's creating like a disk image on either side and then only changing the change blocks, right? But that I need to see. But that sounds pretty cool.
But I believe you can do that. I don't know if they're doing this. I haven't checked it out. I didn't have time. But if you recall, we talked in a earlier show many episodes ago about sparse images versus sparse bundles.
Right.
You remember?
I do. Yep.
And from what I recall, though I haven't really researched it, I don't know if you have, but sparse bundles are a special type of file where there are these things called bands. And the thing is, even though it represents a large amount of data, the bands keep track of, like, I think they're 4 megs or 4 megs or something. I think they're megabytes, but
okay,
they're much smaller than the potential largest size of this thing. So if only a little part of a file has changed, then this sparse bundle is smart enough, if your app knows how to deal with it, and maybe right. The service does, then you only back up the part that changed and not the whole whopping file, which is, I think, what, you know, going back, we see sometimes with the syncing.
Right, right. Well, yeah, that's how, if you keep a local copy of your iDisk, it's stored as a sparse bundle, and that's how Time Machine can back up slices of it without backing up, the whole 10 gigs or whatever it is. Yeah, that, I bet you're right. I bet that's what it is.
And I guess it's worth mentioning that .Mac, although you have to pay for it, and it will be, you know, converted to, what's the...
Mobile Me, right?
Mobile Me.
Yeah.
So, but from what I've seen, and they also offer, you sent me the link, and we'll link to that, of course, but there is a Windows utility, so if you need to share among, you know, Mac and Windows machines, of course, .Mac, for the price. I don't know, personally, I think it's worth it for all it does, so... but they offer a nice Windows utility that lets you do some level of disk sharing on Windows. It's actually, I think, a web dev volume, which is over, you know, HTTP. So in theory, any computer that can do web browsing should be able to access a web dev volume. So,
yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I got to check out this Dropbox thing. That's cool. All right. Moving along to Paul. Is that right, John?
Right.
I took a... sorry. You know, we were listening to Paul before, and we jumped the gun. Here we go.
Greetings, Dave and John. This is Paul Scott from Las Vegas, Nevada. I took a tip from one of your previous shows, and I purchased myself a new microphone, a Blue Snowball. So I hope my audio quality sounds better now, and so far I'm loving the new microphone. Thanks for the recommendation. I have two comments on Parallels today. First, when you set up a Parallels partition, you can set it to automatically grow so you don't have to decide a partition size right away. It doesn't shrink automatically, but they do provide a utility called Parallels Image Tool that'll allow you to resize it. But if you don't want to set a specific size when you install, it'll grow as you add files to the system. The second tip is the shared profile. If you go into Edit Virtual Machine Shared Profile, you can set your My Documents in Windows to link to your documents on Mac, My Pictures to Pictures, My Music to Music, and Desktop to Desktop. Make it easier to share files back and forth between OS X and Windows. So those are my two Parallels tips for the day. Thank you very much. And I'll leave you guys today with a quick question. Where did Don't Get Caught get started?
So do you have anything to say about Parallels?
A little bit. So first, I think Paul sounds, he sounds marvelous. Yeah. No, that mic sounds good. Though actually, Dave, you've turned into a little audio geek, and I guess he could use probably a little padding. I heard a little echo there off of the walls. But anyways, no, the Snowball, I mean, you and I like it for on the road action. So
yeah, although I have to say, for podcasting on the road, the Rode Podcaster is now my favorite.
Oh, well, yeah. But that's a big boy mic. That's a hefty.
It's three times the price too, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably not quite as transportable, but anyways,
it is. Yeah.
You know, and I would just say off the bat, I'm wary of anything that resizes a partition. I'm just going to say that because I've seen, and we talked about this last time, that Parallels and resizing and all that sometimes, you know, especially when you're doing it on the Mac side, resizing and then expecting Windows to deal with it. I don't know. I would just say I generally get nervous about dynamic resizing. So if you're going to do that, you know, just back up often so it doesn't lead to disaster. So even though I know the tools do that, I'm just wary. I don't trust.
Okay. Two things with that. One, you're right about the backups, and Parallels does the snapshots where you can save a snapshot of mm-hmm. the working state and restore from it at any time. So that would be step one. Step two, though, this is not a partition, right? This is just essentially a disk image, and it's just a file, right?
Looks just like a network of all, or a physical.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, the way, right. Parallels translates it that way, but it, I don't think it's any different than the sparse bundle that you create when you sync your iDisk to your Mac. I mean, that in theory could be 10 gigs, right? Because that's the size of your iDisk, but it doesn't take up 10 gigs. It only takes up the amount of space that you have data occupying. So
true.
I
see your point.
You know, I guess my point is I tend to trust it pretty well. It's, you know, we've been doing this a while, that technology meaning, and, you know,
yeah,
there's
but
always
it never
risks.
Hurts to me, it never hurts to be paranoid
you
and
got
make
it.
An extra backup, maybe on an external volume.
Yes.
Just if something really bad happens. So, yes. Again, I'm sorry to be the pessimist, but, you know, when you're doing backups, that's kind of the point.
Oh,
right?
That's the point. Yeah, it's not if, it's when the problem strikes. All right. Speaking of problems, Leon.
Hey, Dave and John. This is Leon from Maryland. Hang on a second. I want to turn down my podcast. I don't want you to get feedback.
Always a joker.
I wanted to thank you for answering a question of mine a couple of podcasts ago. Appreciate the help. Wanted to comment on a recent topic around parallels and fusion on and issues with viruses and security that you covered in the podcast 155. One thing to consider, while the viruses can't jump to the Mac side from the PC side, a lot of Windows viruses like to scan around and delete files or harvest information from files. So if you use the features in Parallels or Fusion to expose your Mac drives to Windows, if the files can be read and they're in a format that can be read by any of these viruses, and certainly they can easily be deleted, that could get you. So what I do is carefully open up only those folders and files that really need to be accessed in Windows and leave the rest shut down. And in some cases, I make some of the stuff read-only. So that gives you that just that little extra bit of security in case your virus software doesn't catch a virus that's out there. One other quick note is while you can make your files available to your Windows partition from the Mac, the one challenge you have is that they show up as network drives, and there are some programs that don't really like that. I've had a lot of problems with Quicken for Windows running in Parallels, and I have to store the files in the Parallels partition because Quicken chokes when it tries to get to the network drives. It thinks they're network drives trying to get to the Mac folders. So just a little bit of warning there. It's worth trying to see if you can do it, but if you get weird behavior in the applications, that may be the answer. You may be stuck with keeping the files in your Parallels or Fusion partition. Anyway, thanks for all of the great tips, and hope this helped you out a bit. Bye.
Thanks, Leon, and thanks, everybody, for sending in all these tips. I mean, this is fantastic data. I know I'm learning stuff. I hope you all are. And John, you got something you want to add there?
I'm not. I mean, no, I'm learning. Tons, of course.
Of course, yeah.
All right, I thank everybody that writes or sounds or whatever I call it. But no, it's a good point. When you're sharing, yeah, and I mean, the one thing I'm impressed by the functionality of some of these environments like VMware and Parallels to be able to share somewhat seamlessly, though I actually had a kind of weird thing today when I was trying to map a network printer. It didn't quite work out that well on the font. Font,
okay.
If you will. So I got to figure that out. It was printing out weird fonts. The graphics were coming out okay. So I got to review that in Parallels. But the other thing is, yes, if you have, well, on the one hand, I understand that Office has pretty much eliminated the problem with macro viruses and stuff like that. But still, some documents, I guess, can be infected, including graphic files or other type of files. So yeah, I would agree. If you share, as you said, Dave, I think if you share stuff, you want to limit, or the listener said, if, or
right.
Both of us, limit what you share. Now, the other thing I thought was a interesting little tangent is printer viruses, because a lot of these environments also let you share with a printer. Now, it is possible, though I haven't seen one in a long time, and I think a lot of the printer languages like PostScript and PCL have put in safeguards. But I remember actually as a wee intern when I was going to school, we wrote little PostScript viruses that would do fun things like turn the background and the font and everything black, which, or white, whatever. and actually I think Pilot Pete there has some stories which you can't really talk about, but anyways, printer viruses are, and actually this is my finger wag to IT people. I've seen so many, including my 9 to 5, where network printers are kind of open to the world. I mean, the wonderful thing is you have a web interface. The bad news is a lot of times they don't even set it up to protect it from, you know, casual
sniffers.
Yeah. So anyways, that's my closing comment on that.
All right.
A little sip of water here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, John, you and I are both suffering from allergies or something. I hope it's just allergies and not, I don't know. I've had something going on. I can't sing for more than like an hour. It's been crazy. But anyway, so before we move on to the part where we answer your questions as opposed to you providing us with advice, I wanted to tell you about our first sponsor for the show this evening, and that is Second Gear with their product called Today, available at secondgearllc.com/today. Today is a compact little interface that lets you see and edit your iCal data for today or really any other day. You can navigate back and forth and see, you know, days in the future and, of course, days in the past. You've got at the top of the interface, it shows you all your appointments for the day. And then at the bottom, it shows you your to-dos. And you can create new appointments and to-dos right there in the interface. The cool thing is, because Apple has I believe it started with Leopard, but certainly with Leopard and maybe with Tiger. No, just Leopard. They abstracted out the calendar data store. So this app isn't really syncing with iCal. It's more that it's reading from and writing to exactly the same data store that iCal does, just like Mail does with your to-dos. So anything that you put into this will appear in iCal. And if it's a to-do, it'll appear in Mail as well. Works really, really well. I actually now, once they started sponsoring the show, I wanted to check out the app. Now I can't stop using it. It's really just a nice, quick interface without having to launch iCal, which has gotten really, really clunky, by the way. And it's of course available for a free trial, and it's $15 US, but you can save 10% on your purchase by using the code for this show, which is MGG156, since this is, of course, episode 156. All right. So that's Second Gear's Today at secondgearllc.com/today. And with that, Scott, take it away.
Hello, this is Scott from Washington, the state, not the capital. Hey, I have a question for the magicians. I'm trying to sync my wife's calendar with mine, or actually share. Basically, I want to share a calendar on two computers. So I cleaned up the one on my iMac, and then I synced it. I had it clear everything on .Mac and sync it with the computer. Then I went to her computer, had it clear everything off of hers, or had it, say, replace everything on this computer with everything from .Mac, thinking that it would mirror what was on my computer, and then we would just have separate calendars for her and for me within that. And but when it came down, it came down as just blank and gave her a home calendar and a work calendar, but none of the stuff that I synced to .Mac showed up on her iCal. So I'm wondering if that's normal or how we can do that to where we can, I don't mind if we see each other's calendars and all that, so, you know, I figured she could change things, it would automatically sync to .Mac, and I would see it on mine, you know, after a couple minutes or whatever it takes for .Mac to fix it. So I just need a stopgap. I'm assuming Mobile Me will fix that. So can you let me know if I'm doing something wrong or how I can achieve that through .Mac on two different Macs? And then the second question is, since the update that they just put out for Leopard, I haven't been able to use, I've never got back my Mac to work on my iMac, at least, you know, remotely from other than on our network, but outside our network, I can't seem to connect it. And I've done the dynamic DYNES, and I can, I use that for a couple other things like phone valet and stuff to get into my computer. But the back to my Mac hasn't worked. And with the recent update, it now shows under back to my Mac, it actually says, it gave me a warning of why it didn't think it was working. And it said I had two different NATs running. So I tried turning the NAT off on my DSL modem, and I think it wouldn't even let me get to the internet, so that didn't work. So I took that back on my DSL modem, and then I took NAT off of the my AirPort Extreme, and it still didn't work. So it's nice that it's giving me some information on why back to my Mac has never seemed to work on my computer, but doing its advice didn't seem to help. So I'm wondering if there's additional settings that I have to do besides turning off NAT on one of those devices or not. So I know that's a whole lot to chew on, but you guys always have the pretty good appetite. So I'm going to leave my email address right here.
Oh, okay. So we'll start with you're getting a twofer here, Scott. So we're going to start with the first question about calendar sharing. So if you have a single user .Mac account, not the family share, but a single user, or if you have the family share and only use the same user, if you both sync to the same user, meaning you go into the .Mac system preference pane and the credentials in there are the same on both machines, assuming you've got on the next tab over, you've got syncing turned on and then iCal turned on, in theory, it will sync your iCal data back and forth. It doesn't care about the username of the person on the machine. It's just the .Mac data. So assuming that that's the case, yes, it will. But that also means if you want to sync contacts with .Mac, you're going to be sharing those among the computers. .Mac is really meant not to share with other users, but to keep your own data in sync from computer to computer. And MobileMe will be the same way. MobileMe and .Mac really are one and the same. MobileMe is a, like we talked about this last week, is a new name and adds some additional functionality. The web interfaces got a revamp. And then, of course, we have an iPhone and a Windows client for it. So that's that part of it. If, though,
the
go ahead.
Only thing, well, the only thing I want to add is that I've noticed that, for example, so in iCal, you have groups, which you can define.
Yes.
And in iSync, you can specify per device, I guess, what groups you would like. So I'm just pointing out that...
Very important, though, to note that iSync has nothing to do with what he's doing. iSync is only for, like you said, for devices, and really only for third-party devices, right? It's that kind of sort of almost deprecated support thing.
Okay, whereas, and I thought I'd mention it because it, within the iSync calendars section, you can specify these same groups that you see in iCal. So, but the other thing I mentioned is that, and actually I've wrestled with this, and so it's a little tangent, but the Palm that I have, and I use the Notes conduit, is that I have these different groups showing up, and sometimes it gets kind of squirrely into what groups get backed up to what device or what network store like .Mac, so...
Okay. Okay. Yep. So, but there is an answer. If you want to have two different .Mac accounts syncing for various reasons, there's a piece of software called BusySync, which will allow you to do a couple of different things. One, on a local LAN, it will allow two computers to sync an iCal calendar with or without .Mac. And you can edit. As opposed to, you know, with iCal, of course, you can share your calendar if you have .Mac, and then other people can subscribe. BusySync it makes it a two-way street, so you can not only subscribe but edit the same calendar together. It will also sync with Google Calendars as kind of the intermediary if you want to do it that way. So you don't have to be on the local LAN. You can set up a Google Calendar account to bounce that stuff back and forth. So that's just that might be the easiest solution for you here, Scott. So now let's talk about back to my Mac. First of all, yes, it's better in 10.5.3. No, it's not perfect. But as you saw, it points out some of the issues. Now, I think, John, you and I will both agree on this. If you've got two routers in place, for various reasons, as Scott does, you do not want to have NAT routing and DHCP turned on both of them. You only, right? You only want it on
not the, unless you want to disrupt the network that you're on. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, for things like Bonjour to work and all that, you want to have everybody on the same subnet. And if you've got two NAT routers kind of, you know, hanging off of each other, that's just not going to happen.
I think
so.
Technically NAT, if it's done right, could do that. But DHCP is just bad because it's all from the last I looked, the DHCP is a broadcast thing. So a machine says, hey, DHCP server, tell me what I should do. And if there's multiple ones, well, depending on which one is closer, I guess, they'll say, here, do this. And then the other will say, do this. So.
Yeah. So, so definitely do what you've done. That may or may not solve the back to my Mac issue. It's obviously one thing that would prevent it from working properly, assuming the second machine, the machine you're trying to connect to, is hanging off of the second router. But even still, back to my Mac is a little bit clunky, and it works better if the router that you're using is an Apple router. I'm not going to say it doesn't work with third-party routers, because mine, for me, actually, it works fine with my Linksys router with that, you know, third-party software on it and everything. But certainly, you know, they've built it to work as best as possible with Apple hardware, because that's what they test with more than anything else.
You may shake your fist at me.
Okay.
I would say because I've run into these cases with not necessarily Mac, but Windows remote access and stuff, and you may want to go to your firewall and temporarily lower it down to maybe allow essential, because I've seen a lot of times a firewall gets in the way of some of these services that assume, I think, that the firewall will honor UPnP or other sort of requests to open up ports and allow things to happen. And if they don't, then you're sitting there watching a spinning beach ball of death or spinning cursor or something. So I hate to have to say that. That's why I'm saying you may shake your fist at me, but sometimes killing the firewall temporarily may let you do what you need to do. And then, you know, after that point, especially if you have a network admin, say, you know, what's up here? Can you? And actually, where I'm at, our network admins have been very gracious in their support of, you know, these weird requests. As long as you say, you know, I need this port, that port, that port, that port.
Right.
As long as you're not, you know, saying, please turn off the firewall.
Right. So. Yeah, and make sure you know, you buy them lunch a couple times a year that helps smooth things over, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So it's the remote sharing thing is always kind of shaky. Especially, again, if you have a firewall, like in a hotel or a big company or probably not a school. But
Right. All right. Let's see what Robert has to. We love Robert.
Hey, it's Robert Hazelry from New Jersey. I am calling because I have a question that I don't know if you can answer. That is, did Snow Leopard give any hints as to adding multi-touch in its next incarnation? I was certain that we would get some sort of glimpse at WWDC of some form of multi-touch or a more robust multi-touch on the Mac. I'm certain that that's coming. I don't know it other than just an educated or uneducated guess, I should say. I was just wondering if you've had a chance to look at it or find out anything about it. If you don't have time to call me or email me, you could just say wink on the show. I guess it would be one wink for yes and two winks for no. That way you don't have to divulge any information. But anyway, thanks for any insight that you may have. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. So, yeah, you know, they talked about in the public keynote, right? They talked about Snow Leopard very briefly. And I did go to some of the sessions. Now, officially, the sessions that I see at WWDC, the data that's presented to me is under NDA. Now, I'm sure the data from most of those sessions will get out. There's 5,000 people there. It's not a tight NDA, but I'm not going to violate it. Right. There's no good reason to. I can't talk about any of the details that we saw after the fact, but to be perfectly honest, what we saw in the Jobs keynote is sort of the broad strokes. And then the details are just nitty gritty, but the answer is two winks. I certainly, now maybe there were other sessions I missed, but I certainly didn't see anything about, multi-touch or anything. That doesn't mean it's not there. To me, what I got, and I got this from Jobs keynote, and this opinion didn't change throughout the week. Snow Leopard clearly is built for all the under the hood stuff. It's my speculation, and I think there's a lot of people that share it, that Apple's not going to really be able to charge $129 for this thing, assuming they head down the same path with it. They've got a couple of the new architectures that are in there, the OpenCL and the Grand Central, the threading model, and those will make things faster and are pretty cool in their own right. But I think the only consumer targeted feature, if you want to call it that, is native Exchange 2007 support. And, I don't know how big of a deal that is. I mean, Microsoft's targets are that 2007 will only have 40% adoption by 2009. So I'm not sure that even that's a big deal. But yeah, you know, certainly for some people it would be. But yeah, I think Snow Leopard is kind of, you know, the we spent too much time with our engineers on the iPhone and pulled them off a Leopard. And so we've got this other cool stuff that we want to kind of roll out under the hood. And this is how we're going to do it. That's basically what I got when I saw Steve's keynote. And I, like I said, my opinion hasn't changed. So two winks.
Our rant, though, I think in the question was multi-touch. Yes.
That was what he was asking about. Yeah. There was nothing about that.
I don't, you know, and again, as a software type of guy that knows how to do hardware as well. Mm-hmm. Why can't you just spread the love about multi-touch? I don't see any technical reason why it has to be isolated to a certain trackpad or a certain USB controller. You know, anything you can do in hardware, you can do in software, maybe slowly or slower.
Right.
So that's always aggravated me because I was working with a coworker that has one of the first generation dual core Macs, and I started, you know, trying to guide him to do something in Parallels. I'm like, well, just do a double, you know, a two finger click in Parallels because that's a control click. Oh, well, no, it's not. Not on his machine. And it's like the limitation. I mean, I'm sure the trackpad, if you ripped it apart, the electronics short of the firmware or the controller or whatever, I don't know where it lives exactly. But so to me, I think as many, because I don't know, Dave, I found one of the more compelling features of the latest machines in the OS is multi-touch. Being able to scroll, being able to surf and stuff like that. I just find it so much more useful.
Yep.
And I can't understand why they limit the population unless to drive hardware sales, maybe, which as an Apple stockholder, I can certainly support. But
that's right. All right. So I have some theories on this. First of all, I agree with you. You know, for the most part, I don't use the trackpad on my laptop because it's connected to a display and a keyboard and a mouse. But when I'm traveling, as I, of course, was last week, multi-touch is now totally ingrained in my workflow. I mean, don't even think about it. I just use it to scroll around and everything. The scrolling, especially for me, is huge. I couldn't possibly live without it. I don't know how I did. So I agree. You know, there's certainly going to be a lot of happy people if suddenly multi-touch was available in the older machines. So why isn't it? Your profiteering theory might be correct. There's also kind of in that same vein, right? The whole Sarbanes-Oxley thing where, you know, you add features to a device and now you've already counted the revenue for it. And now you've got to do all this crazy accounting. Certainly they could, you know, do something like they did with the iPod Touch. Every time it comes around and there's an update that, you know, we've got to charge you $10 because we're adding features to a device that we already counted the revenue for, blah, blah, blah. I think Sarbox was well-intentioned and is a disaster. But so that's potentially it. But really, my guess is that you're right. It's software, but it's the firmware in the trackpads. And sure, the old trackpads can do it. There are third-party utilities that will kind of sort of allow you to get there, but it's not as smooth as it is on the machines that were built that way from the outset. And we all know how Apple is. They want to preserve the UI. They want to preserve the UE, the user experience. And if they can't do it perfectly, they don't do it. So I think you combine all of those things together. It's like, why go back and support an old machine on this? Let's just, you know, eye on the future. Burn your bridges, as Leander Caney says, and go forward.
Yeah.
So that's my thought there. All right. I want to talk about, we should talk about our second sponsor here, John. And Audible, I know we've mentioned it, is back. They took awesome. A month off and they're back. So the old link that works again, audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekCab. And that'll get you a 2-week free trial of the Audible Listener Gold. And it gets you one free download. I'm currently enjoying a book by Neal Stephenson called Snow Crash. It's a really kind of geeky story, almost, you know, I kind of relate it to a William Gibson-esque thing. But there's this whole kind of,
it's neuromancer, kind of.
Sort of, it, you know, that this, there's this thing called the metaverse where it's this virtual environment where everybody kind of hangs out and there's interesting things happening in it. It's actually a really good read. I've been enjoying it all last week, and it's available on Audible. So you can get that one for free. I think the unabridged version is $34.99 if you were to buy it. And if you use audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekCab, you can get it today and listen to it for free. So you can't beat that. Go ahead, sign up. You do have to provide a credit card to sign up. But if you cancel before your 2-week free trial is up, you do not have to give back any of the books. All the stuff that you pull down is yours to keep, including your free download. So important to note. That's right. I wanted to make sure we got that across because I don't know that we'd ever actually clarified that before. So audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekCab. Happy to have him back. We've got another trackpad question here from Adam. So here we go.
Greetings, Geek Gabbers. This is Adam in Southern California. I have a couple of questions, so I'll try and be brief to get everything out there as quickly as possible. So question one, I have a G3 Mac iBook. That's really my kid's computer now, and the trackpad has stopped working. It only really works with a mouse plugged in. I went through the system preferences and looked for anything in the mouse or the keyboard or trackpad control panel system settings things that might say turn keypad on or off, and found nothing. I think I even went through the prefs and tried to delete the mouse or trackpad preferences, and that didn't seem to do anything. So wondering, obviously something's corrupt somewhere. Question is it hardware or software? Is there a way to tell? Short of reinstalling the OS, is there any kind of simple or not so simple fix that I can do to get it working again? Okay. Before the second question, I will apologize if I sound like a Muppet. It's because I have a cold. Probably doesn't sound.
All right. And I'm actually going to cut it off here because, unfortunately, Adam's second question kind of trailed off in the middle there. So you want to take this one or?
Yeah, I'll take start here. So number one is I think he mentioned he has kids near the computer, so they probably got some gunk on the trackpad.
Could be.
Dave, I mean, your kids are pretty well behaved, but I've still seen some mishaps. And
of course,
you know, again, I know a lot of people that have. I have no kids myself.
Yeah. I will note something. Coca-Cola, in my experience, is the worst thing for electronics. It's even worse than water. I had a keyboard one night. It was actually Lisa. We were still dating. She had a rum and Coke going, and poured that. Spilled it on the keyboard. I'd spilled water on this keyboard in the past. I'd spilled, various other things on it. The Coke in that drink totally ate away at the keyboard immediately. Yeah. And that was the end of it. It would never worked again. So if Coke ever hit that trackpad, certainly,
Yeah. So I've kicked around with the people I work with, which are a lot of brilliant scientists and engineers and stuff. And pure water does not conduct electricity. Of course,
pure water
is a challenge.
Yeah.
There's some gunk in there. But anyways, so I would say that the place to look would be in, and now this is a G3, so I'm not sure what OS you're running. Under System Profiler, I would say the best place to look would be the USB category. At least on my machine, it shows the keyboard and it shows the trackpad as a separate device. If your machine does not see that via the System Profiler, then... And I love to say this as a software person, but it's a hardware problem. In other words, either a connector or something. I mean, if the software that is meant to see it. So one place I guess would be to look would be the system preferences under keyboard or mouse or whatever. And usually trackpad will come under there. So if you don't see it under either of those, well, actually one thing I was just experimenting with today was, on the newer Macs, you can hold down D to do diagnostics. On the older ones, you have to boot off of the CD, but you could run the Apple hardware test, just to do a thorough test of the electronics.
So I have a question about that. I have something about the trackpad too, but in order to do the diagnostics, you have to have the boot CD or boot DVD in there and hold D down to do it, correct?
For the older machines, I believe it's actually, what is it? We'll link to it as we always do.
Yeah.
But on the newer machines, actually, you don't even get it on the DVD or CD. It's on the hard drive.
I had no idea.
On our MacBooks.
Really?
Boot your MacBook, hold down D. There you go.
Learn something new every day. But
that's
Happy anniversary to me.
On the newest machines. On the older machines,
yeah,
as we mentioned, it's on the install OS
DVD, something?
Which I guess you just boot it. Do you have to hold down? I'm ill prepared. But anyways.
Okay. All right. So with regards to Adam's issue, he wanted to know if there was a way to definitively rule out software as the cause. And I think the best way to do that is to grab that boot DVD or CD, whatever it would happen to be, and boot from it. That way you're not booting off of your internal drive. You're booting off of the CD, which in theory has been untouched, right? It's got to be good. And that'll tell you right away, right? That's the guaranteed way of doing it, at least in, you know, as far as guarantees go. Yep.
But it happens. But I'm wary of, as I think we mentioned, humidity or environmental stuff, because I've noticed when these trackpads get wet or in a high humidity environment, they don't work that great.
Yep. Yeah, actually, that's true. I've found that. If your hands are sweaty, it doesn't work all that well. All right. I think we got time for another one, and this is a fun one.
Do we have time?
Yeah, of course we do. Let's jump back here to the other Robert. Before we jump back to the other Robert, I've been meaning to do this all show. You can contact us. You can send in your own questions. You can send in your own tips.
Get out.
Yeah, you can even send in just if you want to say hi, right? And there's, believe it or not, we get a lot of feedback of people just saying, hey, love the show, just wanted to say hi. And that's fine. I love it, actually. It's great. So how do you do that? Well, you can write an email, and the email address, John, is?
What is it?
You don't have it memorized. It's feedback@macgeekgab.com.
Right, I know the number.
Okay, what's the phone number, John? If you want to call, you can pick up your phone, your iPhone, your telephone. You can get one of those old bag phones and plug it into your cigarette lighter.
Maybe? 206-666-GEEK, which is?
4335. And then you can Skype your comments to MacGeekGab. So those are the ways we can get them. I'm sure, you know, Pony Express and smoke signals and snail mail would work. Pony, but
come on, USPS, please.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Or FedEx or
that's right.
UPS
yeah.
or
that's
something.
Right. Yeah, but go ahead and FedEx us a comment. that'll make some friends of the show very happy. All right, so let's go to Robert.
I got a really geeky question for you. I have a Wii Nintendo system that sits on my wireless network, as well as a few Macs. This is at my house. And was wondering, is there a way to check and see how much bandwidth my Wii system is using when I play a game like Mario Kart Online? Just wondering if you knew. I was just wondering how much bandwidth it's actually sucking up from the rest of the world. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Well, first of all, I guess we got to trade friend codes on that because we're going to need to see who's got the mad skills at Mario Kart. But this is an interesting question because it is good to know. And, you know, it's the kind of thing you may not have a Wii and you may not care about that, but you might have, say, an Apple TV and you want to know how fast is this thing sucking down data, right?
I had the expensive but definitive solution.
And that was?
Well, that is you get yourself, for those who have done software or hardware work, you get a protocol analyzer.
Okay.
Which is a device that is meant to, and actually I'm playing with one at work that I'm very happy with, to do USB work. But basically a protocol analyzer is a device that you put on a communications line, and it basically watches everything going back and forth and tells you what's happening. Now, the only bad news is they're typically if they're a standalone device, expensive, but they're good, you know. And again, if you work for a company, you can probably afford to get one. You know, they're several thousand bucks. But I think, Dave, when we were talking before the show, you came up with a brilliant solution on how to do this for a little less money.
Yeah. So probably not worth spending a couple grand to figure out what Mario Kart's up to. but who knows? You know, I mean, we all have our priorities. So my first thought was, okay, we head down the SNMP path, which means Simple Network Monitoring Protocol. And it's a way of querying devices to see what they're up to. And there's a jillion things you can get out of them. But most routers, including Apple's routers, will report the bandwidth that they are consuming, both upstream and downstream, and will report that separately. So you can use a piece of software. I've used a program called MRTG, which is Multi-Router Traffic Grapher. And if that's not what it is, it sure sounds good. And it essentially runs on, I have it running on one of my machines, and every 5 minutes it queries my router and then builds these graphs. So you can see what it's up to. And if any of you were at WWDC, you saw some of these MRTG graphs up on the displays that talked about. Yeah.
Those were nice.
That was cool. Yeah. So everything okay? I hear noises. All right. So that's one way to do it, and it is free, but it requires, it takes time. Even if you know exactly what you're doing, it takes time. But then you're right. I had an inspiration and I thought, you know, Mario Kart via the Wii connects wirelessly to the network. So unplug your router, plug your Mac into the cable modem directly via Ethernet, and then go into the sharing system preference pane and enable airport sharing, right? So internet connection sharing, if you will. And then connect your Mario Kart, or connect your Wii up to your Mac's wireless network. So now essentially your Mac is acting as a router, but it's a router that has a really, really killer user interface. And you can do all kinds of stuff with it, including launching either Activity Monitor, or if you have menu meters running, you can launch menu meters, and as long as you're not doing anything else on the connection at that point in time, you can see how much traffic is being used, and then you chalk that up to Mario Kart. So that's my
answer. Done that. So a few things. So number one, we have and Dave, you and I both use this Intermapper.
Yep.
So it costs money. I think this is a, you know, medium grade, you know, work group or corporate product, so it costs money,
right?
Know, several hundred dollars. So, but it displays, from what I've seen, things, you know, I'm sure they have a trial, but it displays things very nicely. So that's one option that you may want to look at if you're you know, operating a bigger network.
Yep. All right, well, so that's the answer. If somebody has an even better answer, really, if anybody knows about any good SNMP tools for the Mac, I'm sure there's something out there that would get this data easier than MRTG does, especially just for a snapshot if you're not looking for, you know, a history graph or anything like that. So,
like I said, the only thing I would mention is that you want to be cautious about, because I did this, so it was probably over 10 years ago.
Okay.
But when I was in a environment where you had to set up your computer manually, whether it be Windows or Mac, and it was most likely Windows, like Windows 3.1. Yes, I'm dating myself. You could set these parameters manually, like the subnet mask and the router and all that. Here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to set your computer to be the router.
Right.
So that's my only caution to what you said, Dave, is don't be very, very careful if you're going to punch in these addresses manually. Because if your computer is saying, hi, I'm the router, that can't be a good thing.
Right. Yep. That's true. All right. So you can, there's a couple things we need to talk about here as we wrap up. iPhoneAlley.com is Michael Johnston's site, and he has converted this into AAC for your listening and interactivity pleasure.
Excellent. And we're gearing up for that show, right?
That's right. Before we talk about the show, iPhone Alley is giving away an iPhone 3G. So go check it out. They've got a thing going. So only one, and you got to contribute to the site, but you know, it's all free. So go check that out. Yeah, that's right. New Media Expo is coming up. It's, I think, 58 days away or 59 days away at this point. It's August 14th through 16th in Las Vegas. So that's Thursday through Saturday, which is great. They've got it more during the week, which I think is a good thing for the whole industry. John and I will definitely be there and would love to see you there. So CashFly is the company providing all the bandwidth for us. And the podcast marketplace this month includes the A5 and A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebone Software, Page Sender from Smile on My Mac, Conference Recorder from Ecamm Networks, Audible, of course, your free download from audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab, and our favorite travel source, harman-etravel.com. You can give us an anniversary present, though. We love those iTunes reviews, and right now we're at 188. So can we break the 200 mark between now and next week, which will be Monday? So we've only got 6 days because we recorded a day late this week. So you got your work cut out for you, folks, but it's 12. There's thousands of you out there, tens of thousands. I think we can get 12, right? Please. Can I ask, please? All right. Yeah, that's all we got here. So let it ride out.
Yep.
Yep.
Stop talking.
Go Celtics.
Hmm?
Celtics are playing. Right now they're playing. Yeah. Could be the big thing. First time in 22 years. Don't get caught.
Maynard.